It's the 16th of October, 2019, and this is HPR episode 2923, entitled Describing How I Listen to Podcast Part 5. It's, of course, hosted by Mr. X, and it's about 29 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, in this episode, I cover how to use my second add-on board, the PiFace Control and Display. And the show notes contains photos and detailed instructions for your information. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Welcome, Hacker Public Radio audience. My name is Mr. X, and welcome to this podcast. I'd like to start by thanking the people at HPR for making this service available to us all. It's really an invaluable service. They go to a great deal of effort to streamline the service and make it as easy as possible to use. Just pick up a microphone, record something, and send it in. You must have something interesting to say, I'm sure. It's really quite easy. If I can do it, anyone can. Okay, this is part 5 of my series about how I consume podcasts, listen to podcasts, something like that anyway. And last time I was talking about my second add-on board, which is a PiFace, what is it called? PiFace Command and Display, I think it is, something like that. This time I'm going to describe what I've actually done with the thing, you know, how I use its capabilities and whatnot. And it's hugely flexible and can be used for lots of purposes, really. You could turn it into an internet radio. You could control a Kodi instance somewhere. There's a whole host of things you could do with it. I'll cover what I've done with it. The description the manufacturer says that you can basically throw away your keyboard and mouse. I think that's a bit of a stretch of the imagination. You couldn't use it like a desktop computer or something. For simple controls, it's absolutely ideal. Anyway, here we go with part 5. Okay, so I'll explain the operation of this project that I built out of a PiFace Control and Display add-on board, a Raspberry Pi, an enclosure, and a few other bits and pieces. So it's the enclosure tends to sit. I may have mentioned, I'm not sure. Looking at my notes, how I'm going to pull this all together. So I may have already mentioned it, but it tends to sit on its back, which means you can't see the display. And the idea was that I could see this thing from all around the room. I might not necessarily be very close to the thing to see it, sort of thing. So I didn't think it was very good that it was lying on its back. So I got an anchor stand for my tablet, and I wasn't actually using it very much, and I found it fitted just perfectly. And it holds the unit at a 45 degree angle, so I can change the angle as well, of course. And it sits very securely; it never falls off, and also gives you access to all the buttons and whatnot. So it works really well. And In essence, what happens is this is like a remote control unit, remote header unit for a Raspberry Pi upstairs, which has the audio player mock music on the command line running all the time. And by pushing a button, it issues an SSH command to control mock on the other Pi, which is upstairs in the bedroom, and allows me to play my podcast at will. The system works really, really well. I'm very pleased with it, in fact. A really good solution. I just plug it in and forget about it, really. I don't know if it's quite unique. I don't know if you can do that with other operating systems. You know, can you c could you issue a command line command to another remote computer to remotely control something? You know, in other words, could you script things on other operating systems? Is it possible in Windows? I don't know. Maybe somebody could tell me that. I've never done that in Windows, didn't know it was possible. Maybe it is. I've recently I was at a friend's house, and was they had a posh plush Apple Mac thing, laptop, and it had SSH in it. I don't know nothing about Apple Macs, so I don't know if you can control, if you can issue an SSH command to an Apple Mac and remotely control things, you know, run things, script it remotely. It's very, very, it's hugely powerful. So maybe that's quite unique to Linux. I don't know. Anyway, so this project, I'll describe how it works and what it does. I'm going to just plug it in now. So, oh God, nearly just pushed it off the table there. Where's the plug? Any second now. Right. Get that out of the road. Come on, get in. Right, I think that's it in. Yeah, so yes. So when you do that, you get a brief flash from I've got a blink stick connected to the right-hand side of the unit, and oops. Just move the microphone here. The blink stick has got two RGB LEDs, a front-facing one and a black back-facing one. And you can mix the colors from the three LEDs to approximate any color you like, sort of thing. So that's quite useful. Behind that is a Wi-Fi dongle thing, which is quite a lot of latency on it. But just on a tiny amount of data going back and forward, it really isn't an issue. And I'm not an eraser or anything like that. It's actually sometimes quite handy because it introduces delays, giving a chance to see information on the screen before things happen. And on the left-hand side is an SD card. Oh, now it's come up and it says system up. Now it says waiting for IP. And now it's flipped to a screen that says only 8 days for free HPR slot. And now the front-facing LED on the blink stick comes up blue. And that tells me that we're a wee bit short on shows. So get recording. So yeah, so if that number it scrapes that off the it gets that off the HPR site, and if that number is more than is 10 or more, then it's green. The LED is green. If it's less than that, but more than I think it's 7, then it's blue. And if it's 7 or less, I think it goes red. So it's just so that I basically switch on when I come in from work or whatever, and 30 seconds, 45 seconds later, I glance over at it, and by looking at the LED, I can tell is HPRQ empty or adequate, sort of thing, and gives me an idea if I need to post a show or whatever. So that's what I use that for, and that only comes up when you first switch the device on. That's a recent thing that I added to the project. I've been adding bits to it for maybe a few years now. So I'll just if I push the so there's five buttons along the bottom of the device, four grouped together and a fifth one which is slightly further apart, making it a bit easier to differentiate it from the other four. So the one on the end, if I push that one, the display will go to the main screen. and that, you know, the message will disappear, and also the blink stick goes out. So that's me basically cleared that message. And if I push that button now again, what that button does now is it toggles the back light on the LCD screen. That's quite handy. So yeah, so I'll describe the functions that these buttons do. So the main screen, first of all, on the top left hand corner, it has got a number 0 on it, and that signifies that we're in menu 0. There's actually there's three menus on the thing. Confusingly, it starts at 0. So from now on, I'll just talk about 0, 1, and 2. So menu 0 is used when I'm controlling playing podcasts, basically. And menu 1 is for playing audiobooks. And menu 2 is system. And these were all added over time. Mock can play, can queue up multiple things. So I've got a podcast queue and a audiobook queue. I can't remember the actual command. It might be dash Y. I can't remember. So you basically pick a different directory, and you can set up another queue. I should have looked at that. Let me just think. I'll probably describe it in more detail when I'm describing mock itself, or may have already done so, depending on how I record this show. But so the next to the number 0 is a number 1, and next to that, right beside it, is a play control, a play symbol, and a pause symbol. So basically, if I push button 1, it plays and either plays or pauses my podcasts that are in the playlist, and it does that by issuing the command mock dash capital G, which is toggle. So that toggles between play and pause. And I think from memory, if you push the button, it'll say audiobook on the top line, and it'll say play slash pause. And it stays there for a second or so and then disappears. And when it disappears, that means that the command's been sent and accepted by the Pi. You know, it can take a second or so. Luckily, a lucky fluke that the Wi-Fi adapter has got a bit of latency in it. Sometimes it can sit for 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds while it's doing its thing. Generally, it just takes a second or so. But I'm in no hurry, so it doesn't matter at all. So that's button 1. Button 2 says button 2 says info next to it, and that gathers information of the current track you're playing, and it uses the dash I command, so mock space dash I. And again, that was built up over time. It didn't do all this initially, and in fact, I think my first command ever built on the thing was just to play and pause, you know, toggle play and pause. And so it's been a gradual build up of options and things. So I push button 2. I might need to speak kind of quick because it happens kind of quick. So let's just see. Push button 2. Oh, so it says menu 0, button 2, podcasts. That's in the top line. And then on the bottom line, it says information. And then, so that stays there for a second or so, depending on how long the Wi-Fi card takes to send that information, that command, I should say. And then it says 6 of 18 tracks, 34, 55 seconds. When it also tells you that it's the mock is either in the play mode or in pause mode. The top left-hand symbol tells you is the track currently playing or pausing, and it also finally tells you that there's 31 minutes and 48 seconds left to play. And finally, it says Late Night Linux, season 13, episode 15, and then jumps back to the main screen again. So there's three bits displayed on the screen. First of all, the first bit telling you that it's the command that's issued. The second bit tells you about the running time and whatnot. And finally, the third command tells you the track information. So that means it's really quite useful. So I know, oh, I'm getting quite near the end of my playlist. I better add some more tracks. But it can take me a week or so to get through that many podcasts. And of course, you can queue up loads of tracks, obviously. So that's button two. Button three has got a rewind symbol written, and I had to draw some of these actually. And button three, it just says podcasts next, and then podcasts and previous, it says, and it jumps to the previous track. And likewise, button four, it says podcasts next track. Now, I added a wee extra thing to the previous and next tracks because I found that I maybe miscounted the buttons sometimes. I was trying to push info, for example, which is the second button, and I pushed the third one button by mistake. And then I would go back a track, and oh, heck. So what I did is, for the previous and next track buttons, because I don't use them very often, I introduced a double tap facility, so that you need to tap it twice within a certain amount of time for it to activate. If I only push it once, nothing happens. So that stopped me falsely going back and forward a track when I didn't want to. And finally, the fifth button toggles the backlight on the LCD, which I mentioned previously. And the menu one is exactly the same as menu zero, except it does it for my audiobooks, the same thing for the audiobooks. If I'm in either menu zero or menu one, which is for audiobooks or podcasts, if I push, there's a toggle switch on the top of the unit, and you can toggle it either to the left, to the right, or you can push it down. So if you push it down, I've got another menu come up, says zero, so it tells you I'm in menu zero, which is audiobooks, and it says seek, and below the seek is a message exit with a minus and a plus either side. Now if I push the button in again, it would just exit back out, but if I push it to the left, it says minus 1 minute. Push it again, minus 2, minus 5, 10, 20, 40, and finally returns back to exit. And likewise, pushing it the other way goes plus so many minutes. So that allows me to seek forward or back in the current track. I'm just going to come out with that. Exit. And we've got a menu 2, which is obviously the third menu, confusingly, and it says 2 system. And then it comes to the screen for system. And at the top left-hand corner, it says 2 to show you that you're in the system menu. And for button 1, it says sys information. Button 2 says Wi-Fi. Button 3 says HPR. And button 5 is light. So if I push button 1, sys info, now I think that might be a command I stole off the intertubes. So it runs a separate command, but it gives you information about what the Pi is doing. So I push button 1. It says 1 system information, waiting for IP, gives me a 192.168.1.10, 39.0 degrees, and, I'll just do that again, because I missed it. System info, waiting for IP, 26.1%. Not sure what that means. Is that the Wi-Fi signal? I'm not quite sure. Button 2 gives me information about the Wi-Fi, so if I push button 2, 1, 2, it says system Wi-Fi info, gives me the SSID, 95% signal strength and the IP address. Quite handy. Button 3, which I won't push, does the same thing as when you first turn the Pi on. It goes to the HPR site and scrapes off how many shows are left in the queue. So that's that one. And finally, 5 turns the light off and on. Now, there is another option. If you're in a system menu, and it isn't mentioned on the menu, which is a bit confusing, if you push the toggle button down and you're in a system menu, it turns the Pi off. I get a message, something like shut down, and it gives you the date and time and whatnot. And then I think the blink stick comes on with a blue light to warn you that it's shutting down. And there's a wee holes at the top of the case, so you can look through them and you can see what the LEDs on the Pi are doing. so you can see it flashing away as it's shutting itself down and stopping. And I generally give another 5 or 10 seconds after that just to be absolutely sure before I unplug the thing. Now another facility that I added at a later date was the bi-phase control and display board is equipped with an infrared sensor, an IR sensor, and I was able to program it to work with a remote control. I initially tried to program it to work with a spare remote control I had lying about the place, and I wasn't terribly successful with that. And I found an information a lurk, I think you call it a lurk file, Linux infrared control, something like that. I found a lurk file for I think it was a Samsung remote control, and that's in fact the remote control I have for my television. And it wasn't exactly the same remote control, but 3/4 of the buttons were the same. And so what I did was, because the problem is, if I was going to use the TV remote control, then because this thing's on all the time, if I was playing with the TV, it might upset this box and go off and start playing podcasts and whatnot, and I would lose track of where I was and everything. So that was an issue. So what I did was I set it up so that if I push the blue button, then it activates the infrared remote control. But that in itself wasn't enough either, because I found that I inadvertently sometimes activated it by pushing the blue button. So what I then did is I introduced a double tap again, just like the previous and next buttons. You've got great flexibility with the libraries and stuff that come with a Pi-phase control and display board. And so by double tapping the blue button, it says, I think you get it flashes 3 times the backlight of the LCD. And it says IR on. I did, and then I think if you push it, double tap it again, then it says IR. It flashes once and says IR off. I did that so that I could know at a distance whether it was activating or deactivating the infrared. But of course, after I coded that, I then got myself a blink stick, and I decided I could use that to determine whether the infrared is on or off. So basically, now when I double tap the blue button, and as well as the LCD flashing 3 times, which is probably overkill and not necessary now, the blink stick comes on with a red light. The front-facing LED comes on red. So at a glance, you can tell, all right, the remote control's live. I better watch what I'm doing. And on top of that, when it is live, I still then found that I occasionally forgot and started things going when I didn't mean to, particularly when I was playing with Kodi. So what I did was I made all the other buttons, other than the light button, double tap as well from the remote control. So if I push the play button twice, then it basically does this. It basically activates that button one, which is toggles between play and pause, for example. And I used the stop button to toggle between the backlight, but because that doesn't matter what the heck that's doing, I didn't bother introducing a double tap on that one. So, and the thing is that the sensor for this thing is deep inside the unit, and I thought, oh, this is never going to work. You need to be right next to it or whatever. But I found that it was very sensitive and worked all around the room to the far corners. The blink stick's got two LEDs, a front-facing one and a back-facing one. The back-facing one, I use that when I send messages to the box. What happens is I get a bright purple. I bring on a bright purple LED to show that that there's a message come in, basically. So it means I can see this bright purple halo behind it, and that draws my attention to the fact that there's a message sitting on the Pi to look at. And I send messages such as, this backup's complete, or this download's complete, or I mean, I can send any message I like to it, basically. I generally timestamp it so I can see, oh, that happened half an hour ago or something. It's quite handy. Find it really the unit immensely useful. And because it works on Wi-Fi, I can take it anywhere I like, plug it in, and control this remotely control this Pi elsewhere in the house. So in fact, I've got the unit sitting on the desk next to me just now to explain it to you basically. I'm trying to think if there was anything else. I don't think there was. Can't think. Nope, don't think so. Hope you don't find this too boring. So I'm going to turn it off now. So if I push, it's on the system menu, and if I push the toggle button down, it'll say shut down 18:02, 10:53 and 51 seconds, and the blue light comes on. And if I look over the top of the wee holes in the case, tiny wee holes, I can now see the green light on the Pi board flashing 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it stops. So now the Pi is probably safe to turn off. So I'll just unplug that now. There we go, that's it off. Yeah, so this is a final solution for controlling mock music on the command line. I do still sometimes use my triple E PC occasionally, and again occasionally maybe my laptop or the PC, but 90% of the time it's this control box thing that I use. And hopefully that's inspired you to maybe do something similar yourself if you get a bit of spare time. These days I haven't got as much time, but I still manage to do a wee bit of programming occasionally on the box. The most recent thing I did was the seek command. So I do get a time from time to time to think about other things. It's hugely flexible, and there's a lot of things you can do with it. It's you're only limited by your imagination. One other final thing, the toggle buttons on the top, I discovered the menus were jumping from time to time, and I couldn't quite work out what was happening. And then it occurred to me that, well, maybe it's switch bounds, because they're pretty naff toggle buttons on this thing. I mean, they work, but they feel a wee bit rough. So I used a double tap thing, so that if it gets more than two taps within a certain amount of time, then it only picks the first one and ignores the remaining ones. And because I tried all sorts of adding in delays and various things, and I couldn't work out what was going on. And that's what it turned out to be, just a switch noise. And you would flick it to the left, and rather than it receiving one command to go to the left, it was maybe getting two or three or something daft like that. So that solved that problem. And that was a bit of a faff sort of working out what was going on there. But yeah, now the device is, it's like a bot. It's almost like a one of these off the shelf bot devices that you buy, plug it in, and forget about it. It's almost don't think of it as a Raspberry Pi anymore. So yeah. Great fun, great fun. So, hope you enjoyed that anyway. I think that's probably all I've got to say on the project. Okay, that's about it for this episode. Hope you didn't find it too boring. And next time I may, and I say may, I've not quite decided yet, I may do a walk through some bits of the code that go along with this project. Just briefly, obviously, because, well, these things tend to take longer than you expect, but I'll try and keep it brief because I know talking about code high level is fair enough, but trying to go into the nitty-gritty is kind of painful in the ears, the syntax and whatnot. So I might do that. I'll see. And finally, if you've got some interesting hobby or passion or something you want to share with us, why don't you do that? I'm sure we'd really find it interesting. Just get off your bums and give us a show. And lastly, if you want to contact me, I can be contacted at mrx@hpr@googlemail.com. That's mrxathpr, the @ symbol, googlemail.com. So until next time, thank you and goodbye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.